We're doing the Netivot Shalom. Our topic is Bein HaMitzarim, the 3 weeks, and the subtopic is Gilui Avato Yitbarach Beit HaChurban, the revelation of God's love in the time of the destruction. Amru Chazal, our sages taught in Tractate Yuma, B'Shah Shenichnesu Oivim Laichal, when the enemies entered the Holy of Holies, Ru HaKruvim Meurim Ze Bazeh. They saw the kruvim, the golden figurines, that they were intimately intertwined. Ve'lechora tamua meod, and at first glance, that seems unusual. Da'arei davar ze moreh al godel ahavat Hashem neYisrael. The kruvim would move, and their movements corresponded to where our relationship was holding. When we sinned, they would twirl back from one another. When we were on a higher level, when God wanted to show He loved us, so then the Kruvim would join and meet. So here, the temple's being destroyed. The Romans are entering the Holy of Holies. Okay, not the Romans. The Babylonians are entering the Holy of Holies. And they see a sign that indicates that we're doing great. Our relationship with God is on a high. Kedita bechazal, as our sages taught in Tractate Baba Basra, Shebizman sheYisrael osinu tzono shel makom, hakruvin pneihem ish el achiv, that when the Jewish people did the will of the Omnipresent, so then the kruvim, these two figurines, would face one another, umurin ze bazeh, and they would unite intimately. Uvezman sheen Yisrael osinu tzono shel makom, pneihem el abayit, and when we were not doing the will of the Omnipresent, so then they would turn away from one another. They would face the Holy of Holies. They wouldn't be looking at one another. Ve'eich b'shat ha'chuban, so how at the time of the destruction of the temple, she'Yisrael lo ayu b'dargat osin rtzono shel makom, we obviously were not on that level. We weren't doing the will of God. That's why the temple's being destroyed. So then how were the kruvim me'urin ze bazeh? How were they intimately joined? What's that supposed to tell us? Od matzinu midrash pliya. Further, we find a medrash that seems perplexing. Al pasuk kara alayim moed. The verse says, God designated a time when destruction would come. So our tradition is that it's talking about Tisha B'Av. That became the set time of destruction for the Jewish people. So the medrash said, shelo haya yom moed liYisrael ki yom shnechav bet hamikdash. The medrash says the word moed could also mean a holiday, not only a set time. There was no better holiday for Israel than the day the temple was destroyed. That doesn't seem to jive right? Uvavodat Yisrael b'shem Rav HaKadosh HaMagid Mimezrit Zchuto Yegen Aleinu V'od Tzfrim HaKadoshim Ita. And in a few works they quote, Beperush Kol Rodefei Hisigua Ben HaMetzarim, explaining the verse, all those who chase her caught up to her Bein HaMitzarim, in between the boundaries, in between the borders of the fields, that's where they caught her. So they explain, Shekol HaRodef Umvakesh Lehasig Et Hashem Yitbarach VeLitkarev Elav Yitbarach. What does it mean, all those who chased were able to catch up Bein HaMitzarim? So we say Bein HaMitzarim means these 3 weeks. They begin with a fast day, they end with a fast day. You're talking about between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. So these holy works write that whoever seeks Hashem, ולהתקרב אליו יתברך, and whoever wants to come close to Hashem, מסוגל להשיג זאת בימי בין המצרים. This is the time to catch up. You feel like you've been behind, you want to catch up in your relationship, so you should know these 3 weeks are the time. Okay. Al derech mashal, if you want, you can compare it to the following. Lemelech shekasher hu nimtza beveito betoch hechalo kashe meod lagi elav. You have a king. When he's at home in his palace, it's very hard to get in. It's very hard to get an audience with the king. Shelo kol ish ro'i u'morshe lavo lifnei ha'melech. Because not everyone is licensed to come before the king. Ach kasher ha'melech noseh baderech. But when the king is traveling, then he's far more accessible. And going with this, so these days of Bein HaMitzarim and Bivchinat Zo They have this aspect to them, Shehamelech Baderech. It's as though God is out of his house, he's on the road. This is the time that's unique in its capacity to come close to Hashem, blessed be He. Shekol rodefea hi sigua bein hamitzarim. That's what the verse is alluding to. All those who chased her caught up to her in this time between the boundaries. Veinei mikol elu amamarim chazinan et godel ha'inyan. And from all these different quotes, we see this great concept, shebetoch ha-choshech, that within the darkness, uvesi ha-chashchut, and in the ultimate darkness, tamun o gadol biyoter. Hidden within the ultimate darkness is a fantastic light. V'yesh lever ha-inyan. So we have to explain. Al pi ma'amar maran, based on what the elder Rebbe said on Parshas Pinchas, Shiyesh bet p'chinot shelet ratzon. There are two types of periods that are considered like grace periods, periods where we find favor in the eyes of heaven. Yesh et ratzon kasher yesh lo lamelech ben mutzlach v'chacham. There's one type of grace period when a king has a son that's successful and wise, shiyesh lo tamid kavod mimenu mimasav u'michochmato, that the king always feels like he gets honor from what his son does, from his wisdom. So the king has moments when he feels very gracious because of his happiness at his son's accomplishments. So that's one type of grace period. There's a different type of grace period. When the king has a son who's retarded. This kid can't accomplish anything. והכל צריך לעשות בשבילו. You have to do everything for the kid. הרי הוא גם הוא מעורר אצלו את רצון. That also arouses a certain gracious feeling by the parent, מאחר שבלעדיו הרי הוא אבוד. Because the parent is constantly reminded, without me, the kid would be lost. שלבד אינו מוצא עצה לנפשו. The kid on his own can't figure life out. ומתוך כך מתעוררים עליו רחמי המלך. And so the king becomes more and more gracious as he senses that there's a life that's contingent on him and he has to give. And as he gives, so he's aroused to giving more. ואת רצון הזאת עוד עולה לעת רצון שמעורר הבן המוצלח. And the gracious feelings that are aroused by the second child are even greater than the feelings aroused by the first child. שהרי בעצמו לא יצלח לכלום. Because the king knows he ain't going to accomplish anything alone. And this is what happened at the time of the destruction of the temple. You're talking about our worst state. So you can look at the destruction from two angles. You can say, what a destruction. The people were banished from the land, scattered all over the world. But the people were also taken with divine providence, with Hashkacha Pratit, and Hashem says, I got to watch over them. These kids, look what they're going to do to themselves. Al ken, migodel rachmei shamayin, hayu akruvim morim ze baze. So the kruvim represented that tremendous compassion that was aroused, where God said, yes, the temple must be destroyed, but I have to protect them. I have to watch over them. Look at what fools they are. It's interesting. You'll see when you have little kids, so sometimes a two-year-old or a three-year-old can do something really stupid. Like a two-year-old can take that brush you're supposed to clean the toilet with and run out to the dining room table in the middle of the Shabbos meal ready to beat you with it. And it's really disgusting. But you look at the two-year-old and you smile and you take it away from him and you put it back or you figure out where you could put it. You go to wash his hands and you give him a kiss. And you go clean up everything that happened and you continue with the meal. But if your 9-year-old were to get upset at his sister and pick up that thing and start running after around the house, then you explode. What's wrong with you? How could you do that? Don't you know that's disgusting? When you have a little one, you know he doesn't understand. He can't do better. You don't hold it against him. You just love him. So it's cute. You have a bigger kid, so then you're frustrated. Hey, you shouldn't do that. What's the difference? That realization, he can't do any better. So sometimes that realization actually causes us to be forgiving, to be gracious, to be kind. That happens to be a key perspective to making peace with other people. Usually we have issues with people because we expect better. And if we've come to terms with it, then we could be more gracious. When Hashem's destroying the temple, Hashem's saying, what a bunch of fools. But they're foolish like a 2-year-old. I have to take care of them now. They've proven it. That's it. They've destroyed the best thing they could have. But now I have to watch over them. V'etratzon gadol kaze yesh bo ma she'en b'shar ha'modim. And so, such a grace period has an aspect that no other holiday shares. Shebahem ayu Yisrael b'medregatam eruya. You look at any other holiday, so it's unique because we accomplished something at that period. Pesach, we all did the Paschal offering in Egypt. We put the blood on the doors. Shavuos, we received the Torah. Sukkos, either we sat in Sukkos or the Anon Yaakovot, but we accomplished something. But here we accomplished nothing. So then this day alone, this day represents that connection that says, well, if you can't do it, I'll take care of you. So that's a totally different type of love. So we should explain the reasoning here a little bit better. God's love to Israel is that aspect of the love of a parent to a child. As the verse says, you are God's children. And when we look at a parent's love for the child, there are three aspects to that love. There's the simple love. When the son is close by, so the parent has a good time, the kid's nearby, and it's a lot of fun. You enjoy the kid. But there's a greater love when the kid is far away. And suddenly the parent cannot connect with the child. So then you start having feelings of fondness that stem from those yearnings that a person has for the child. And the more distant the child is, so you miss him even more. And then there's a third aspect to the love, that tops them all. At a time when the son is deathly ill, and the child has to have a difficult operation to save his life. And the father is the doctor that has to perform the operation.
I don't
realize
that.
The parent has to actually cut the flesh. He knows his responsibility is to save the child's life with this operation. But on the contrary, like you pointed out, his heart is tearing within him that he has to cut his son's flesh. He knows how much his son's suffering. That deep inside the heart, then there is aroused the most potent love that exists. Corresponding to this, we find in God's love to Israel. It is such a powerful, great love, without limit, without any end. Kmo dichtiv, as the verse says, Ahavti etchem amar Hashem. God says, as a matter of fact, I love you. Uchidita shetzadikim zikichut kol ha'avot shelahem milvad ahava lebanim. It says in different holy works that the most pious people worked to purify every form of love they have. They were able to purify themselves of everything. And the one love that remained was the love for their kids, כדי שיוכלו להרגיש מבחינת אהבה שהקדוש ברוך הוא אוהב את ישראל. Because that love they felt they have to sense in order to sense God's love for Israel.
What are the first two levels again?
Number one is when the child is nearby and you enjoy him. Number two is when the child's far away and you miss him. Number three is when the child's ill and the parent himself has to perform the operation. ועל פי המשל הנזכר שכאשר אב צריך לנתח את בנו, and if we take the aforementioned allegory, when the parent has to operate his child, מתעוררת הרחמנות ואהבה גדולה ביותר. At that time, the greatest love, the greatest feelings of compassion are aroused. הרי דווקא בזמן החורבן. So now, the comparison is obvious. The time of the destruction, והפורענות, where we were forced to suffer, התעוררה גודל אהבת השם לישראל באופן מיוחד. So then it's understandable that God's love was aroused in an unusual way at the time of the destruction. שאומנם מצד אחד זה היה נראה כמידת הדין הקשה ביותר. On the one hand, the destruction seemed like the most difficult ruling against us. It's as though God is coming down with exacting justice and destroying everything. אך בעצם, but in fact, חורבן בית המקדש היה בבחינת ניתוח קשה על כל חטאים של ישראל. The destruction of the temple was like a difficult operation to uproot the sins of Israel. ודווקא בשעת החורבן, and specifically at the time of the destruction, נתעוררה בפנימיות הרחמנות, ואהבה הגדולה ביותר לאין שיעור. So at that time specifically, the greatest compassion, the greatest love was aroused. There was once a home for teenagers who were addicted to drugs. And in this home, the counselors and the nurses, they worked with these teenagers day in and day out. And their goal was to help these teenagers get rehabilitated. And you'd work with a teenager for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, a month, until the teenager reaches a point where he says with conviction he wants to quit. And then you've reached that milestone and he starts taking the steps to rid himself of the addiction. And after 2 or 3 weeks, suddenly his resolve gave out and he'd be back doing drugs, only to start all over again. So it was really difficult work, because you'd be taking 2 steps forward and then sometimes 2 steps back and 2 steps forward, and you never knew when you'd have those 2 steps forward and 1 step back and when you'd actually make real headway. So someone once asked the head nurse in this place, why do you guys succeed? What's the key to your successes? So she said, look, these children come to a place which is the first place in their lives where they get unconditional love. Unconditional love that follows them through their successes and their failures, that goes with them in their ups and their downs. Unconditional love that cares, and here's the key point, that cares and therefore says no. Meaning, they might have had people in their lives beforehand who expressed affection, but never cared enough to say no. Sometimes the greatest thing we do for someone we love is when we say, no, you shouldn't do this, and I'm not going to let you do this. I was once dating a girl. We dated over 20 dates, and I couldn't decide. Something in me said, this is not right. But everyone around me said to me, this is right, go with her. And I couldn't bring myself to propose because I didn't think it was right. I couldn't bring myself to break up because everyone around me was telling me, stop kidding yourself, this is right. And then on one date, we started discussing what happens if a sibling tells us that they're too tired to drive back. Sometimes there's a half hour, an hour drive back to their house or to their apartment or wherever they're staying. And we're all together by the parents. And the sibling says, you know, I'm really too tired. I'm not going to be focused for the drive, but I have to be on time for class tomorrow, so don't tell mom and dad. So the girl said she wouldn't tell the parents. She wouldn't have the guts to tell the parents. And when she said that, in my heart, it was over. Because I felt that if you really love a person, you have to be able to say no. You have to be able to go to the parents and say, I know he's going to be upset at me, but you know what? I hope he'd do it for me too. And that was when I said, I don't care what the world says. This isn't going forward. I didn't tell her that. But
was that a nervous experience or food source?
Does it matter? I'll tell you when we're off the record, okay? So the destruction of the temple was where God said, no. Was where God said, I'm not going to let you get away with this. I'm going to put a stop to this. I'm going to perform the operation. Things are not going to continue this way. And sometimes that's the hardest, but that's the greatest expression of love. Sometimes the greatest expression of love comes when the child feels it least. When the child feels like, if you'd love me, you'd give me what I asked for. And that's not true. It's just not true. Very often as parents, we're put in situations where if we love the kid, we're going to do what's harder for us. The kid only sees what's hard for him. As a parent, sometimes you do something that's tough for the kid and the kid doesn't know that more than he's crying, you're crying in the other room. But you got to do what's right for the kid. Sometimes you have to, and the kid doesn't know. When we had the first time that this happened as parents, I called my mother and I asked her, is this normal? My mother said to me, you have no idea. More than you cried as a child, I cried as a parent. I didn't know that. You know, as a child, you don't know how much your parents are crying. But as a parent, when you love, you make moves in the child's interest that sometimes are very hard as a parent. Very often your child asks for something and the easiest answer is to say yes. But it's not the best for the kid. There are small examples. You come home and it's late at night and the kids were in the car or on the bus eating sweets and they all want to go to bed. And as a parent, you have to tell them, no, you have to brush your teeth. And suddenly the kids are like, oh, I'm so tired. And they throw themselves on the bed and they're not budging. And you have to be this cruel parent to brush their teeth. But if you're not going to brush their teeth in the long run, are you doing them any favors? You know they have sugar on their teeth. You know they were sitting there with sweets on the bus ride home, sucking their ices, sucking their candy. They're going to get cavities. And then who's going to suffer more? They're going to suffer more. Did you do them a favor? But the easy out is not to fight them. That's a small example. In life, it becomes bigger examples. V'lachen haitaz b'chinat kruvim morim ze bazeh. So at the destruction, that's why the kruvim were intimately connected. לגלות שבפנימיות העניינים גודל אהבת השם היא בלי גבול וסוף. The Kruvim were revealing that inside everything that was happening within the depths, there was such great love, it was limitless. It is limitless. ודווקא בשעה שהייתה נראית כלפי חוץ כקשה ביותר, specifically at that hour, where externally it seemed so tough. Gila HaKadosh Baruch Hu Godel Ahavato LeYisrael. So Hashem revealed how great His love is for Israel. Zeu biur ha-ma'amar, and that's the explanation of what the Medrash says. Shlo haya yom moed LeYisrael ki yom shecharav bo Beit HaMikdash. There wasn't a greater holiday for Israel than the day the temple was destroyed. Kmo shenemar, as the verse says, kara alai moed. God designated a holiday for me. Ki az nitgala godel rachmanut. That's when God's great mercy was revealed. V'godel ahavat Hashem, God's great love, bli gvul uvli sof, without limits, without end. Shekruvin murim ze baze. That's what the kruvim represented when they were intimately connected. Ukemamar haketuv, as the verse says, min ha-meitzar karati ka. I call Hashem from my time of dire need. Anani v'merchavya. God answers me with breath. Haynu shedavka kasher min ha-meitzar karati ka, az mitgale godel ahavat Hashem. It's only if within those depths I call out to Hashem, then Hashem's love is revealed. And with this, we can also understand what the holy works write, that the 22 days of these 3 weeks of Shivasar Batamos through Tisha B'Av, they correspond to the 22 holidays of the 22 days of holidays in the beginning of the year. From Rosh Hashanah to Simchas Torah, you have 22 days. And the 22 days from the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, to Simchas Torah are a series. Corresponding to those days, you have 22 days from Shiva Asar Batamos to Tisha B'Av. We know from Rosh Hashanah to Simchas Torah, we're moving forward. The greatest day is Simchas Torah, that celebration. By the same token, as we proceed through the 3 weeks, so we're proceeding through days where the light of Hashem's love is concealed, but it's there. In its depth, it's there. And then, what day is the greatest day of love? Tisha B'Av. Corresponds to Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah is our own holiday with Hashem. How does Tisha B'Av correspond with what we've explained? So Tisha B'Av is the day of the operation. So then Tisha B'Av is the day that the greatest mercy is aroused. Just like Simchas Torah is the day where we're unique, right? Throughout Rosh Hashanah is judgment of the world. Sukkot is sacrifices for the world. Simchas Torah is us and Hashem. It's our unique day. So whoever wants to come close to Hashem, these are the days. You have a unique 3 weeks where Hashem's love is potent. It's there. It's waiting for us. And that's what the work Ohev Yisrael writes, that Shabbat Chazon, the final Shabbos, before Tisha B'Av, is the greatest Shabbos of the year. That's what he writes. Now, Shabbat Chazon is a Shabbos where the halacha says you shouldn't even wear Shabbos clothes. We have the custom like the Gra that we do. But you don't, you come to that Shabbos, you barely took a shower all week. You're coming towards Tisha B'Av. Even in the laning on Shabbos, you have a pasuk with the tune of Eicha, of Lamentations. The whole Haftarah is the tune of Lamentations. Lecha Dodi is the tune of Eli Tzion. It's a tune of mourning. So what does that mean? So initially we have to understand, why is it called Chazon? Everyone thinks because the prophecy is Chazon Yeshayahu. But really, then every parsha has its prophecy. You could call it based on the prophecy. Every parsha has haftarah. He says the word chazon represents the vision. The word chazon, what does chazon mean? To see to the distance. And so the prophecy of Yeshayahu that we read on chazon, what does it say? I raised children and they rebelled against me. They are seeds that have done evil. They are children that have destroyed. They have left Hashem. But our sages said, read those verses and look closely. The verses say, they are children who have rebelled against me. They've rebelled, but I call them children. Meaning the prophet is saying, children who rebelled, but he's saying they're still my children. God's saying, they're my seed who does harm, but my seed. They are children who are destructive, but again Hashem calls them his children. So that's Rabbi Meir in Tractate Kiddushin derives from here, that it doesn't matter whether we do right or wrong, Hashem says, you're still my kids. And even when a father punishes his child, so then his heart's tearing as he does it. And so Hashem says, you're my kids, whatever's happening. And that's chazon. We call it the Shabbos of the vision. We're supposed to see beyond the punishment, have a vision, see beyond. And that's what the Holy Zohar writes. Kad alu Yisrael begaluta de Babel. When Israel went into the exile of Babylon, chashivu, they thought that akut shabrichu shaviklon. God must have left them. V'lo yishkach bon lolmin. The Jews thought, we're out in Babylon, God's not looking over us. That's it, we're finished. Haynu shayu shvurim od. They were wiped, they were broken. They thought Hashem kicked them out of Israel, He kicked them out of being in His presence. Ba'ishayta karakut shabrichu lekol pamalia dilei. At that time, God called all His angels and said to them, what you doing up here? If my beloved children are in exile in Babylon, what are you angels doing in heaven? Go down, I want all of you down in Babylon. And I'm going down with you. And that's what the verse says in the prophet, Lemanchem shulachti bavela. God says, I went down to Babylon on your behalf. So the angels went down to Babylon, the heavens opened, and that's when Ezekiel started having prophecy out in Babylon. And Ezekiel says, I saw Hashem and I saw all His angels, and the whole Maaseh Merkava, the whole description of how God's system with angels work. What's he talking about? Why is Yechezkel saying that out in Babylon? Says the Zohar, because that all came down to Babylon. The heavens opened up and God said, I'm not staying up here. If my children are down in Babylon, I'm going down with them. And that's what Yechezkel, the prophet Ezekiel, was telling the Jewish people. Look at you, your master comes with you. God is here. When Israel heard this, they were happy. They weren't worried about their exile because they knew that God hadn't left them. And with this, their souls were resurrected. And it seems like the Zohar is learning that that's the prophecy of the dry bones. The dry bones were the people of Israel in exile. They thought they had no hope. They thought we're finished, we have no life. And Yechezkel gave them life by telling them, no, God is with you in exile as well. And now the final paragraph I want to read sentence by sentence, because as usual, the Netivot Shalom brings it down to our lives. V'ze shayach gam lechol yachid. Now this concept that we learned is relevant to every individual. When a person feels like God has pushed him away from before him, atzato emuna, so then the trusted advice that we can give him is lehamin, to believe she'avat Hashem liYisrael hi nitzchit, that God's love for Israel is eternal. She'ahavti etchem, amar Hashem. For Hashem declares, I love you, as we said in the beginning. It's a declaration. It's a fact. It's part of how the world runs. Ve'ita basfarim ha'kdoshim, and in the holy works it says on the verse, B'shuv Hashem et shivat Zion hayinu kecholmim. It says, when Hashem brings back Zion, we were like dreamers. She'niyeh az ke'yosef ma'alachalomot. That when it happens, we will be like Joseph, who had all these dreams. She'achal she'ala l'gdula, that when Yosef went up to greatness, ra'a she'kol ha'yisurim v'atzarot she'avar, kulam no'adu l'avio el ha'gdula l'imloch al Mitzrayim. Suddenly he looks back at the chain of events, and he says, now it all makes sense. My brothers had to sell me to Egypt. In Egypt I had to be by Potiphar. This way I ended up in jail. I got to know these two people. And then they saw my interpretation was true. It came to Pharaoh, and that's what brought me to the palace. So now he could see the chain leading all the way back to his dream. Kach, so too, b'shuv Hashem et shivat Zion. When God brings us back to Zion, k'shetava geula atida, when the future redemption will come, yiru, then people will be able to see and understand shekol ha'yisurim shavru Yisrael bagalut, that everything we suffered in our exile, hakol noad lavi el ha'giluyim ha'gdolim shel ha'geula sheyu gidulim mitziat Mitzrayim. We'll be able to look all the way back at Jewish history, from the Exodus from Egypt, all the way till today, and see the chain of events. Understand why things happened the way they did. Today we don't see the chain. We don't understand. We look at Jewish history and all we see is blood. You see a terrible history. But, b'shuv Hashem shivat Zion, Hashem brings us back, then we will be like dreamers, we'll be like Yosef with his dream, where he could look and see the whole chain leading back to the dream.